is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
From the People's Social Forum in Ottawa, this is a Rabble Radio special.
No more, 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 no more.
Hi, I'm Victoria Fenner. Well, it's the last full day of the People's Social Forum in Ottawa. Most of us will be heading out to our homes in various parts of the country after the General Assembly tomorrow morning, and it will be followed up by a parade in the afternoon. So, we're in the home stretch, and I think by now I've heard about a trillion words. But there were still many words today worth hearing, and some of those words came from Ellen Gabriel. Ms. Gabriel was chosen by the people of the Longhouse and her community of Ganasatage to be their spokesperson during the Oka crisis of 1990. For the past 22 years, she's been a human rights advocate for the collective and individual rights of Indigenous peoples. Here now is an excerpt from Ellen Gabriel's address.
It is always good to know who my audience is, because sometimes I just assume that after all these years of doing this work that people know the history of residential school, know the history of colonization. And the fact that colonization continues today in Canada and in the US. We are not invisible minorities. We are not minorities. We are not immigrants. We are the first peoples of this land. We are the first peoples. We did not come here through the Bering Strait, although maybe some people did. But I just want to educate you on that, because this is the kind of logic that private property law is based upon in Canada and the US. It's the doctrine of discovery. It's terra nullius. And it's the churches, specifically the Catholic Church, that allowed people like Christopher Columbus to come here and say, well, there's no Christians living here. That means they're not human beings. That means you can claim sovereignty on those lands that you discover. And that's exactly what Canada is still practicing. Canada still has that notion that we gave up our land because we adopted Christianity. We adopted the land. We adopted all the things of this slavery-driven colonial structure that exists today, and the contrary is what is true. I'm going to read you something from the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. Affirming that all doctrines, policies, and practices based on or advocating superiority of peoples or individuals, sorry to the translators, on the basis of national origin or racial, religious, ethnic, or cultural differences are racist, scientifically false, legally invalid, morally condemnable, and socially unjust. And this is from the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights, which says that state parties to the President Covenant shall promote the realization of the right of self-determination and shall respect that right in conformity with the provisions of the Charter of the United Nations. So the Charter of the United Nations came after World War II. So much war going on, so they said, let's not make a mistake, let's all join together, let's all create peace around the world. Which was probably good for about maybe 10 minutes, as we know. It's a very sad kind of reality that the Charter of the United Nations, which is supposed to reaffirm faith in fundamental human rights, in the dignity and worth of the human person, in the equal rights of men and women, of nations large and small. And the government of Canada, the present government of Canada, and I know I'm going to offend some people who may be liberals or NDP hasn't gotten in yet. So, but there hasn't been any government of Canada that has been willing to decolonize, that has been willing to actually enter into a process of true reconciliation with Indigenous peoples. Yeah, we had an apology for the Indian residential school. But as the museum in Winnipeg, a human rights museum in Winnipeg, says, it's cultural genocide. We don't want to go too far because they call it actual genocide. Because maybe there's going to be more law. There's going to be more legal actions in the courts. But you know, one of the things that Stephen Harper said, and this is from Gathering Strength as well in Canada's Aboriginal Action Plan. The attitudes of racial and cultural superiority led to the suppression of Aboriginal cultural and values and languages as well, they should add. As a country, we are burdened by past actions that resulted in weakening the identity of Aboriginal peoples, suppressing their languages and cultures, and outlawing spiritual practices. We must acknowledge that the result of these actions was the erosion of the political, economic, and social systems of Aboriginal people and nations. Nice words, but they don't really mean anything. It's good for somebody way over in Norway or in France or England to see this on the website. But the actual reality is the contrary. Since the apology, the government of Canada has continued the status quo. In fact, it's even worse because we've had that huge omnibus bill, which doesn't legally oblige any corporation or entity, third-party interests to develop resources upon our lands. And as we know, one of the major issues right now in Canada are the pipelines. And there are people from the pipelines that have entered into our communities, and this is their argument. This is the argument that they use for us or against us to kind of make us think that, you know, and they come in with this attitude that we're simpletons, right? We don't look at the internet and we don't read. The pipelines are going to happen anyways, and I'm quoting from them. So you may as well, thank you. You may as well benefit economically from it, and you may as well have the jobs. And most recently, the Edmonton Journal talked about this private meeting that was going on. Sorry, my middle-aged mind is forgetting the name of the place. But what they talked about is, well, let's create this multi-billion dollar trust fund for communities affected by the pipelines, where they're going to be touching, and for First Nations. It's nice bait, eh? It's like, let's reel them in. You know, we're going to give you a multi-million dollar trust fund. You may not be able to drink your water, but you'll be rich. You may not be able to shower or wash your dishes, but hey, you'll be rich. We can import it from China like we're doing that right now. China's going to do everything for us. So it's really ridiculous what this government is actually doing. And they seem to take on, whenever they know something is precious to us, they'll do exactly the opposite. INAC has this great, you know, they give out, there's these SHRC grants, and those of you who are in universities know about all these wonderful grants. We've been the most studied group of people in the world, and yet we still have the highest social problems, highest dropout rates. And then we have the murdered and missing Indigenous women in Canada, and a fascist tyrant who is saying, no, we're not going to have an inquiry. Why? Because, well, economically, you know, it's not viable. How is this going to benefit Canadians? How is it going to benefit Indigenous women if we do an inquiry? But there's another part of this puzzle that we're talking about, and that's a national plan of action, which Indigenous women's groups have been calling upon Canada for quite a long time. The Committee for the Elimination of Discrimination Against Women has called upon Canada to create a national plan of action specifically on the murdered and missing Indigenous women, and they have not yet. In 2006, the chiefs of police developed a resolution at their annual general assembly, and they said, we're going to develop a protocol on how to deal with murdered and missing Indigenous women in Canada, and they haven't done it yet. So it's like, wait, hey, words on paper. We love paper, don't we? We love paper because it shows us how it expands our libraries. Because how many commissions are sitting in Parliament, like the Royal Commission on Aboriginal Peoples, with wonderful recommendations on decolonization, wonderful recommendations on how to decolonize, how to undo the negative effects of colonization. They're wonderful. They sit, and they're great for university students to write papers on, right? Here's the recommendations. But nothing actually happens. Why? Because there is a government, and I'm not going to say that this government is alone. Kelowna wasn't such a great thing. I'm sad to say, to tell you. I went to some of those so-called consultations under the Liberal government of Kelowna, and their education plan was not that much better than what the Conservatives have been throwing around. So please don't be fooled by other parties, because there are friends when they're not in power. And then I think that's what's missing, is that they're always looking to the next election rather than looking at what are the true moral issues that need to be addressed, what are the true issues that need to be happening, and in understanding what self-determination is for Indigenous peoples. We have been dispossessed of our lands and territories. We are dispossessed of our languages and our culture. And people will say, well, it's because you wanted it, right? You agreed to this. I'm sorry, you know, but, you know, we can't help it that your ancestors gave away all your land. Well, they didn't give away our land. What they did was they made agreements, and sometimes under coercion. There are treaties where the people were under duress, and they said, it's a toss-up between whether we're going to eat or whether we're going to fight. And that's what happened to a lot of our ancestors. It wasn't just about signing a treaty and getting a few beads for it, or getting pieces of lands reserved for Indians, and living on those lands. It goes much more fundamentally deeper. It's the future generation. I guess she doesn't like what I'm saying, so I better change my tune. No, I think it's wonderful. I don't mind. We need to be reminded. We need to be reminded of who we're doing this for, and the future generations, and her children and her grandchildren. So please. And the government of Canada has said constantly that the UN Declaration, you know, it's really like, it goes against the Canadian Constitution, and we, you know, Indigenous peoples are going to have more rights, and it's only aspirational. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights that was created after World War II, that's aspirational. But what was required of every UN member state was to implement it, adopt it, absorb it into their human rights domestic legislation, to be practiced amongst society, to be practiced amongst the people. And of course, yes, it doesn't reflect the Canadian Constitution, because the Canadian Constitution, really, to me, in my mind and in my perspective, is really about colonization and assimilation. So yeah, it's true, it doesn't reflect the Canadian Constitution. Because where else in the world do you say we recognize and affirm the Aboriginal people's rights? This is Section 35 of the Constitution. I'm not quoting it, I'm kind of loosely quoting it. And then I remember seeing this YouTube video of the Queen of England saying, you know, I'm the Queen of Canada. And it's such a pleasure for me to be here. And she was talking about that particular Section 35, that they, Canada, would define what Aboriginal rights was. So that means every time we say, no, we never gave up this land. No, we never ceded this land. No, you cannot come here because this is a sacred part of our territory. We have medicines here. This is our traditional. We have to go to the courts. We have to go to the courts to fight in a foreign court on top of that. And it costs millions of dollars. And maybe there's the exceptional lawyer who will do it pro bono. But they got to eat too. And so what's happening today when we see the Chilcotin case, whether it's Delgamuukw, the Supreme Court of Canada, and there are wonderful things. There are some great potential decisions within the Supreme Court of Canada. But first, number one, Canada has yet to implement any of those decisions. And number two, it's a narrow definition of what Aboriginal title is. And so I don't believe that we have to go into the Supreme Court of Canada. I think we have every right to blockade. We have every right to stop Enbridge and TransCanada. And I say so with knowing that many times people will put their lives on the line, and it's not because they want to. Nobody in their right mind wants to put their lives on the line. I'm sorry. If we had a choice to redo July 11th of 1990 and the Oka crisis, and if we had a chance that this would have been done without the violence, that would have been good. But the strange thing about human nature is that we're really good under crisis, huh? If there's a war somewhere, somebody's rights are being violated, we're going to demonstrate and we're going to say to the government, we don't like this. And we're going to unite together when there's a natural disaster. And we're going to send money to the Red Cross. We're going to send money to all these UN agencies so that they can buy food and water and make some sanitation for these people who are affected by war and are affected by natural disasters. But yet, in the meantime, the status quo continues. In the meantime, it's okay. Until it actually touches us, we do not react. And that's what needs to be changed within society. And I see all of you here today. It's because you want that change. You need that change. And I'm sure you're just as tired as any Indigenous person who has taken up the gauntlet of another struggle. You're just as tired of the bullshit, excuse my language, of the Canadian government, who are supporting the rights of corporations.
That was an excerpt from Speech Today by Ellen Gabriel. Well, there have been many wonderful moments for me during this People's Social Forum. One of them was being able to work again with Lois Ross. Lois and I worked together in 1999. She called me with an idea. She was working for the Canadian Labour Congress at the time, and she had this plan. Let's do a radio station at the CLC convention in Toronto, with its own transmitter and frequency. And even more, let's put it on the internet. This was at a time when there wasn't very much audio on the net because we were still using dial-up lines. We had to actually walk our content over to web networks because we didn't have fast enough phone lines to upload them. It was an incredible time. I admired her imaginative thinking then. We had a great time, and it's wonderful to be working with her again. Well, Lois volunteered to help me at the People's Social Forum. So here is Lois as a roving reporter asking people what they gained from being here with all of us.
What's the best thing about the forum for you?
The people. People getting together, getting to talk about everything and nothing. It's just people getting together.
And what have you learned?
What have I learned? That we can do a lot when we start talking and being open about each other and having free discussion as equal individuals.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Good. Your name?
Evening Star.
From Regina?
I'm from Regina, Treaty 4 area, territory. I came here to, to give our stolen sisters a voice in Ottawa for the murdered and missing Indigenous women.
How are you doing that?
In the march, I had a big Canadian flag saying murdered, missing Indigenous women. I'm pretty sure a lot of people have seen it and made the newspapers and everything. And I'm going around taking pictures of people holding a shirt saying, honor the missing and murdered persons.
I'm from Victoria, British Columbia, from Vancouver Island, so west as you can get.
Long way.
Yes.
What brings you to the social forum?
Well, I've been to social forums before. The last one I attended was a World Social Forum in Nairobi, Kenya, and that was in 2007, a long time ago. But it gave me such inspiration, and to be around people that want to discuss and debate social justice issues, for me, is as good as it gets. Sometimes with this kind of work, it's easy to lose energy and get tired because the issues are so big and so insidious. But here you get re-inspired, I think, because there are so many people that collectively are looking at social justice, land defenders, Indigenous rights, all of those issues. So I think it's been, for me, a great inspiration to be here.
My name is Mario Gil.
Mario. So Mario, where are you from?
I am from Colombia.
Wow, you're a long, long way from home.
Yeah, but I live in Quebec.
You live in Quebec now?
Yeah.
So what brings you to the People's Social Forum? Why are you here?
What I bring? I bring my force.
Your force, your energy.
Yeah, my energy.
Est-ce que vous pouvez me dire qu'est-ce que vous aimez le plus du forum?
C'est un espace de rassemblement pour les gens qui, des fois, on se sent plus isolés dans nos communautés locales face à, justement, à ces nouveaux, face au capitalisme, puis face au système qui est en place en ce moment. Fait que c'est vraiment, je pense, une place pour les dissidents, si on peut appeler ça comme ça, de ce système. Puis c'est très intéressant aussi d'apprendre de nouvelles choses, puis de renforcer des connaissances aussi qu'on avait auparavant. Fait que c'est très intéressant, c'est très divers aussi, puis ça laisse beaucoup de place à la réflexion, justement, en participant aux ateliers, puis aux discussions aussi.
So it's been great volunteering with Rabble during the People's Social Forum, and I've been asking people, what do you like the best? So I thought I might try answering the question myself. Well, it's the connections. I actually ran into somebody that I haven't seen for more than 25 years. Way back in the hills of Central America when we worked together as international cooperants. So the connections here, those kinds of connections have been happening for people all weekend at the social forum. And we're learning that some people contribute a lot throughout their lives to try and help make the world a better place. So the People's Social Forum has reminded me of all of that. And it's been super, just super, volunteering for Rabble and getting streeters and talking to people who really care about our future.
Thanks for that, Lois. And Lois wasn't going to let me off the hook.
So, Victoria, tell me, what's the best thing about the People's Social Forum?
Wow, this is a really, really amazing event. There is so much happening. I cannot imagine how the organizers ever organized this. There are so many different pieces, but so much energy, so many people doing great stuff, and just people to talk to and things to think about. And every night I go home after I'm done doing my radio show, I think about what to cover the next day. There's just so much, and that energy is really, really wonderful. And also too, I'm covering it for the Rabble Podcast Network and working with the Rabble people, and that is a wonderful thing in itself.
So now, 1,500,000,000 words later, Lois and I headed off to Spark Street Mall, where there's been an arts and music festival all week. Today there is a powwow. I'd like to end today by sharing some of the sounds we heard, a fitting end to the last full day of the People's Social Forum. I'm Victoria Fenner from the whole Rabble crew. Thanks for listening, reading, and sharing in this experience with us.
Indigenous people came from all over the world, from different nations, from different territories. If you notice the dancers out there, some of them were dancing with their hands up. Those are our good friends, Haichka, from the West Coast, sharing our thank you, sharing their honor with us today. It was so nice to see everybody come together and share in the celebration of dance, of song.